In a stunning victory for free speech, the National Park Service was recently forced to do an about-face. It withdrew a proposal that would have placed burdensome restrictions on protests on the mall and other federal land in Washington, D.C. Citing feedback it had received from the public, more than 140,000 comments, the Park Service announced it was ending its efforts to rewrite the regulations governing speech and demonstrations on public lands under federal jurisdiction in the nation's capital. The proposed new regulations, made public in August of 2018 by then Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, would have imposed hefty and unprecedented fees on groups organizing protests on federal park lands in Washington. The Park Service has the responsibility and the legal obligation to protect First Amendment activity, and so it is good that officials dropped this plan. Joining us today is Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, co-founder of the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund in Washington, D.C. Over the years, Mara and the partnership have secured millions of dollars in settlements for police infractions of protesters' rights at mass assemblies from 2000 and 2002, the IMF World Bank protests, to cases where law enforcement used false arrest tactics based on political affiliation. She also successfully challenged New York City's efforts to restrict mass assembly in Central Park.
Mara, welcome back to Law and Disorder.
I'm so glad to be with you.
Congratulations on this huge victory. I have to read a sentence from the Washington Post editorial. Quote, "The real credit goes to the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, which first raised the alarm about the changes, and the hundreds of organizations of all stripes that joined in opposing the plan during the comment period." Mara, that's some huge praise for you.
Well, it was really obviously a delight to see that editorial by the Washington Post on Sunday. You know, the thing about that editorial, in addition to, you know, certainly we appreciate the recognition, but it's also really talking about the core of what happened here, which was principled united front organizing. This could not have happened if we did not have so many groups and organizations and people all across the country who came together, progressive people who decided that they were going to fight back and join together in this uncompromising fight. That's what made the difference here.
Can you talk about just a few of the groups who came together over this? Was it national? Were they, civic-minded, grassroots?
Yes, and I think stepping back to talk about what the Trump administration attempted to do here is important because it then impacts all of the so many people across the United States, and that became the motivation for this incredible fight back. So the Trump administration in the middle of summer last year put out a 100-page rulemaking document in which they basically attempted to eviscerate protest in the nation's capital on federal land. And that would be all the locations that people think about when they think about iconic critical demonstrations, either that they've attended or historically. This is the Lincoln Memorial, the National Mall, the White House sidewalk, Lafayette Park, so many core places in Washington, D.C. where people come together and where history has been changed. And what this administration tried to do was put out rulemaking that would have changed the entire permitting system that's been forged over 50 years of constitutional rights litigation, where time and again, the National Park Service and the Department of Interior, which oversees this land and is supposed to be a neutral administrator of the space, has been forced again and again to comply with the Constitution and make these spaces available. And they wanted to impose bankrupting fees and costs for use of our public space that would have made it impossible for any grassroots group to protest. They wanted to change the rules that require the Park Service to act on permits in a timely fashion so they can't just sit on an application and wind down the clock. It's called a 24-hour rule. They wanted to basically do what we called an occupy ban, which would have made it unlawful to have any sustained presence more than 30 days, any vigil, any protest of any kind. And that doesn't happen that often in our history, but when someone comes and says, I'm not leaving until this issue is paid attention to, that's a really important capacity. They want to eliminate that. And they wanted to shut down the White House sidewalk, just close the White House sidewalk almost in entirety to protest. And you can picture the suffrage movement, the anti-war movement, the anti-lynching movement, so many people that have taken to that space, they just didn't want to have it anymore. So when we sounded the alarm and got the word out, grassroots groups in Washington, D.C. came together, as well as groups all over the country who come to Washington, D.C. So we're talking a united coalition of labor, of climate justice, of anti-war groups, peace groups, of women's rights organizations, LGBTQ, immigrant rights groups. Everybody came together and joined together in this fight.
How did you get the word out?
As soon as this document came out and we saw it, we broke down this 1,000-page document going through line by line. And we tried to break it into manageable explanation as to the key points. We did like a top 12 document of changes. We did more detailed legal analysis. And we made this material freely available to groups and organizations. We convened an initial coalition that then built into a larger coalition. It was basically there were coalitions of coalitions. And we put this material out and we told people, just take this material, put your own names on it. You know, we didn't care about it in terms of, you know, some ego or interest in identity with the document. We just wanted the information out there. So people were using this material, they were adapting it for their own audiences, and we worked with groups to put in substantive comments into the administrative record, affidavits, very detailed challenges. The Partnership for Civil Justice Fund itself put in multiple detailed legal comments, because in this process, for the government to put out final rules, they have to contend with this administrative record. So there was 60 days within which to build this record, and everyone was working against this clock to build this administrative record. And it's important that there be more than just sort of petitions, more than, you know, people just doing a sign-on petition, because as a legal matter, the government can just sort of do a summary dismissal of that kind of, I oppose this because I oppose any restriction on my First Amendment rights. Those are important because it shows the numbers of people. But to really create an obstacle, we needed substantive comments. And they actually ended up with tens of thousands of substantive comments. And we believe that this is ultimately what stopped them. We were actually, we had prepared a case. We were expecting to go into court and seek preliminary injunction to stop the rules from taking effect. We thought that they would be promulgating final rules at any moment. And they folded because they actually couldn't get over the hurdle of the legal record that had been built.